We can't dig in our heels so much to be unwilling to just listen. You know, I think a lot of it's about posture. Are you willing to learn? Are you willing to be humble? I think for me as a clinician, I'm really passionate about, I want churches to learn these things. I want to educate folks, but it's hard to do that if there's a posture of you have nothing to teach us. You know what I mean? And so I think that matters a lot. It matters a lot.
Hey there, friends. Lindsay here to tell you about something new and exciting we've started at Upside Down Podcast. It's called Patreon. If you aren't familiar, Patreon is a fundraising platform for creators to get paid for their creations. Simply put, it's an easy way for you to support your favorite artist, creator, or podcaster. As you might know, we created Upside Down Podcast in 2016, responding to the void we felt online and in real life among Christians. We quickly learned we weren't the only ones desiring genuine ecumenical dialogue and thoughtful engagement about the world we live in. Shannon, Kayla, and I have been paying for the podcast out of pocket for the last couple of years. As it's grown, so have expenses associated with operation and expansion. We like to keep things super simple, but still, each month we've got podcast bills to pay, and paying for everything necessary to keep it going is beginning to take its toll on our families. Hashtag keeping it real. That's where Patreon comes in. We're inviting you to support us for as little as $1 a month. Of course, I'd suggest you check out the $5 a month giving level, because with it comes a sweet newsletter in your inbox every month. $10 a month gets you all that and exclusive content. I might be biased, but it's totally worth it. No worries, the podcast will remain free, but Patreon is a way for us to pay the podcast expenses we've been covering ourselves and allow us to build a buffer for those exciting new ideas we sometimes have in the shower. And we'll finally be able to purchase actual mics and recording software. This will obviously enable better sound quality and make it harder for you to tell we sometimes record in our cars. It'll also allow us to dream big. We have many things we'd like to do, like those gatherings y'all keep bugging us about. But without additional funding, these ideas won't be able to come to fruition. Head to patreon.com/upsidedownpodcast to learn more and to join us. We couldn't do this without you, and we wouldn't want to anyway. I hope you enjoy this incredible episode.
Welcome to episode 36 of Upside Down Podcast. My name is Kayla Craig, and with me today are my co-hosts Shannon Evans and Lindsay Wallace. We are really excited because we're recording a topic that is very dear to our hearts, and we know it's dear to a lot of our listeners' hearts, and it's the topic of mental health. And we have got a lot of messages from followers and listeners. We did a survey a while back, and this was a theme that kept coming up. And so we really have thought a lot about this and tried to be really intentional about the topic that we are going to discuss today. So we hope that this is a fruitful conversation. We hope that you feel loved and valued and heard. And we hope that our guest is really going to share a lot of insight and wisdom with us. We're really excited to have her kind of at our digital table today. It's Andi. And you know what, Andi, I should have asked how to pronounce your last name.
Oh, that is okay. So it's Andi Kolber.
Andi Kolber. Okay. Andi Kolber is a professional counselor in Castle Rock, Colorado, and she specializes in trauma, depression, and anxiety through all life stages. She's also a writer, so we like her, you know, already. If we already didn't like her, then we really like her. And she's married, and she's a mom of two. So Andi, thank you so much for being on the episode today.
Yeah, well, it is just a pleasure to be here. And this is just a topic that's so near to my heart. And it actually, in a kind of a geeky way, makes me really excited to hear that this is such a theme that's been coming up, because I think culturally, this, you know, I think we're feeling how important this topic is. So yeah, really excited to be here.
Well, Andi, is there anything that you would like to tell our listeners about your background? So when I say specialize in trauma, depression, anxiety, what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, so I like to call myself a trauma-informed therapist. And so what that looks like is all of my work, even when I'm not specifically doing what someone comes in for trauma work, is through the lens of understanding people as whole people. So the brain and the body, our nervous system, they're all connected. And so the trauma-informed piece speaks to this idea that we don't just experience our emotions in our brain, like we experience them in our body. And our thoughts influence our body. And, you know, they work together. And so this whole idea is centered in, you know, one of the theories that has become more maybe popular is not the right word, but that's the word I'll use right now. But it's called interpersonal neurobiology, and kind of a long term, but it basically just brings together all those things I was just talking about. It's how we relate to people and then how that affects our brain and our body. All that to say, like almost all the work I do, no matter what the issue is informed through that lens.
That's cool. So interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of a mouthful.
No, that's fascinating though. And I know that all of us as co-hosts, we have kind of had to inform ourselves on some of this as we have raised children that have gone through some traumatic backgrounds. So yeah. We're diving with you on that. And I would love to hear you share how your faith impacts that, because you studied, tell us a little bit about your background in that capacity.
Yeah. So, reaching far back, I have been a Christian pretty much my whole life. So I originally wanted to be a social justice lawyer, which makes me laugh now because, I mean, bless my heart, but that's just not, it's good that I didn't become a social justice lawyer. what was always important to me, I think, was these themes of change and growth and justice. And even before I really lived into that myself, I just knew that I wanted to do something that mattered. And at that time, that's kind of what I thought that I could do. And so ultimately though, I got my undergrad in business, and then, that's when I thought I wanted to be a lawyer and had a lot of life changes come up. And then ultimately went to Denver Seminary for my master's in counseling. And so it's been about 10 years, a little over 10 years since I've graduated. And that experience of going to Denver Seminary was really, really important for me in terms of what I'm going to call basically integration of faith and psychology. And so, you know, while I was there, so I, you know, I got my master's in counseling, and it's essentially a, you know, it's an accredited program, like a nationally accredited program. But I also did, you know, I also took like theology classes and Bible classes, and I had, you know, an actual like capstone class around literally called integration. And so, you know, you essentially are always, anytime you're coming, you know, when you're intersecting with like a theory, you're also saying, how does this intersect with my faith? How do I sort of look at how this connects or maybe doesn't connect with my faith? And so that was a super helpful and impactful experience for me, because it really gave me the lens to say, you know, how do I view integration? And then how do I utilize information that's maybe coming to me that maybe it's not from a Christian, but how do I synthesize that information in a way that is still helpful and ultimately still lines up with, you know, with the Lord and with my faith? So it was really important. I mean, I don't think I would be doing any of the things, maybe not any of them, but I don't think I would be able to speak to the faith and psychology integration nearly in the way that I do if I hadn't gone to Denver Seminary.
That is amazing. And I just love that idea of integration, because that's the idea of the kingdom here, right? Like it's everything. God impacts everything, and God is in everything. And there's a beauty and a hope to that.
Yeah.
So as we get started, and I should just tell our listeners, we have kind of come to the table ready to share a little bit of our own stories and a little bit of our family's experiences too. So this is a question for everybody at the table, but if mental health has affected your family's life, or, you know, loosely, Andy, if you can talk about people you have experienced in seminary or beyond, how would you describe what that experience has been like for you?
This is Shannon. And for me, mental health has been kind of a reality of my family ever since I can remember, to different degrees, obviously in different ways. And no one in my family that I know of had ever sought professional counseling. But then now in my family that I myself have formed with my husband, we have two members of our family who have mental health disorders. And when I hear that question, the first thing that comes to mind is it's really lonely. And I think part of that is because it feels different than talking about like a skin disease I have, or, you know, like, you know, this arthritis or what, you know, whatever other kind of thing, because it is so complex. And there's a lot of, you never know how people are going to receive it if you start talking about a family member's mental health or your own mental health struggles. And so I think there's an element of isolation for my family that comes, and also probably too, a fear of like being put in a box. You know, you don't want people to think that's all that this person is when there's so much more than that.
It's like there's a stigma. There's a stigma against that. You kind of have to brace yourself and protect yourself or your family against what might happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, what I just resonate with that idea, Shannon, of what you're saying. I think isolation and loneliness is really common for folks who are experiencing mental health issues and illness. And I think sometimes, you know, my experience as a therapist, but also as a person, is that, you know, sometimes we want to say, okay, if someone qualifies for like a full-on mental illness, it fits in this box and everybody else fits in this box.
Yeah.
If you have a mental illness, then this is what applies to you. And then if you don't, then you do it this way. And I think that makes me, I mean, it just grieves me, because I think, you know, mental health is such a, it's a continuum. And sometimes the ledge between a full-on disorder and like maybe the threshold of a disorder is not very far, but we treat people differently. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's so good to point out. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like normalizing the experience of the fact that every person needs to take care of their mental health. Some folks are going to be more fragile than others. Some folks have some genetic predispositions. Some folks have experienced trauma that's going to trigger more difficulties. But like, it is a human experience to have mental health. You know, like it's what we all have. It's a part of what it means to be human. And so when I hear you talk about that, it makes me so sad that it's such a isolating thing, because it's actually so common.
Yeah. This is Lindsay. And I was going to say, I was nodding along with all that has been said so far, but I have extended and immediate family with mental health disorders, and some of them on that spectrum are fairly severe. And I can definitely concur with the loneliness, but I think another feeling or way that I would describe that experience, there's a lot of helplessness in terms of knowing where to get quality care and just navigating that whole world, whether it's health insurance or people who don't seem qualified, or, you know, whatever the case may be. There's just a sense of helplessness that comes along with that, particularly when you're the caregiver or you're trying to get services for someone in your family. But I was thinking, Kayla, when you were talking about the stigma, So when my husband was a cancer patient, we had people bringing us meals. We had offers for childcare. We had all this support going on because he was sick. And then his cancer, you know, went away, or he went into remission, and he suffered from some pretty serious depression. And we didn't get meals, and we didn't get childcare, and we didn't get any of those things. And that's not just because people in our community didn't love us. It's also because we didn't tell anybody, because there is that stigma, and there is that sense of what Andy was talking about. You put a person in a box, and there's that dichotomy that happens between physical health and mental health. And one of them is acceptable to talk about in the church, and the other one is usually not. And so for us, the loneliness that was a part of it, was we didn't share because we didn't feel like we could.
Yeah. I echo that. Yeah. Well, and I think that's such a good point. You know, I think, and I'm sure we'll get into this more, but I think, you know, Christian culture has a particular way of handling a lot of these issues too, which for better, for worse. But I think one of the things that, you know, what you're speaking to, Lindsay, is that feeling of, you know, when you're dealing with a physical issue, hey, we'll give you all this support. But somewhere, and I, from as far as I can see, especially, you know, looking at church history and stuff, our Western culture, we've become so disembodied. We become you know, we are brains walking around. We're not bodies walking around. You know what I mean? And so because of that, it's kind of like there's this shame involved with, even sometimes when it's not articulated, it's like, you should be stronger than that.
Right.
Like if you tried harder, because I don't mean to get ahead of our questions, but I mean, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, if you follow X plan, then you shouldn't be sure if you're a good Christian.
If you just do your self-care, if you just read your Bible in the morning, if you, we put a lot of onus on the doing. Like,
And the thinking too, like think yourself out of this. my experience as a therapist is a lot of people have a lot of insight and don't have a lot of tools to turn that insight into change. And I think that's very rooted in our culture that can be very cerebral, but not embodied, you know, not what it, and what I mean by embodied is the experiential change, not just knowing about the change, but experiencing the change. And what are the things we have to do to experience the changes we're looking for? And so all that to say, I mean, I think that just builds on the shame, right? Shame builds on shame.
It's like it festers, like it just grows. And something I was thinking as you were talking was, I wonder if another part of this too, Andy, you had mentioned that some people might have a genetic predisposition to having different struggles, and wondering if maybe Lindsay, kind of pulling in what you were saying, that it feels sometimes like in church culture, it's like, well, if you do this or this, you'll get better. And I wonder if there is a little bit of a putting in boxes kind of dichotomy where we say science lives in one side and faith lives in the other. Have you experienced that as a therapist? And kind of, I want to kind of just bring that in with the idea of integration, and how I just want our listeners to hear, if somebody has said kind of some of those ideas that Lindsay brought up, what would you say to them?
So, like, let's say, a client comes in and they're struggling with feeling like, you know, feeling shame because they're not able to pray themselves out of their depression, for example. Would that be like kind of what you're speaking to?
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, gosh, what I would first want them to hear is that piece around, you know, this is a full body experience. Depression is not transactional. Like, you do this, then this. Oftentimes it's rooted in what is going on, basically in the circuitry of our brain.
a lot of it has to, it can be rooted there. And so I think sometimes people need to hear, this is not about you not being good enough. This is not about you failing as a Christian. This is not about you not loving Jesus enough. Like, this is oftentimes, and this is what's tough about something like depression. It's kind of the common cold of mental health. So you could be depressed for so many reasons. It could be because you need to grieve. It could be because you have a past trauma. It could be because you just physically, like, the chemistry in your brain isn't producing maybe the serotonin that it needs to, things like that. And so, but just to hear that, taking the responsibility off of the person's doing, you know, like, you're not at fault for not understanding these pieces. And so I think that's a really, really important piece, that there's often, I think, especially for Christians, not a lot of education about the brain and body, and how that is connected. And, yeah, you know, speaking to that integration piece, for me, that fires me up, because I'm like, God made our body. And what's so cool is that the more I do this work, it's like God leaves these beautiful little gems of his goodness that are wrapped up in the tools that are available to us, whether we're Christians or not. But it's like you can see God's fingerprints all over them. Like, an example is that our brains are designed to want to heal. And so when something is traumatic, it that gets blocked. And so part of my work at a very basic level, it's kind of like a midwife, like helping someone unblock those things that have kept their brain and their body from healing, and then allowing their bodies to do what God made them to do. To me, that is just gorgeous, because I'm like, that's what we're made for, you know? And that is God's goodness wrapped up. But when we blame someone, like, hey, that trauma you're experiencing, if you just tried harder, you wouldn't be so triggered. And then they're like shaming themselves, and it makes it worse. And they never get to access the truth that that trauma can actually be unwound. So I don't know if that does that kind of speak to what you're talking about there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've kind of heard you say tools. What are the tools that we have? Like, anyone, what can we do, whether it's, you know, the common cold of mental health or something a lot more, I don't know what the best word would be, but not as common, or maybe more debilitating, depending on, and that's another thing that I feel like sometimes I feel like I don't know the words to say, like, I don't know the right language to use when we're discussing, you know, mental health, because I don't want to say the wrong thing, because I know there's definitely wrong things, but then I feel like sometimes that causes silence, and then we don't talk about it at all. Yeah. So that was a little rabbit trail.
No, I think there's a lot there. So to answer your question in terms of the tools, you know, I think a few basics just begin with this idea of even becoming, just building on self-awareness is a really foundational thing. And I will say that I think there are a good amount of Christians who are really beginning to understand that this is important, which honestly makes me so happy. And just this idea of, like, it's okay to pay attention to what's going on with you. Like, it's not a sin. You're not sinning if you recognize that you're sad. It's not a sin to just know that, hey, that interaction felt strange to me, and I wonder what that's about. So even though it seems so simple, a lot of times I think folks are sort of socialized to, I would call it almost like a martyr perspective, like trying to so not care about yourself that you, before you know it, you're sort of almost completely disconnected from yourself. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? And I think that self-awareness piece is sort of a foundational part of a lot of the other tools. because if you're not connected to what's going on, there's you can't really implement other changes. You know what I mean? That's a really basic one, but it's even just doing simple things like, you know, taking a moment in your day and just settling your breathing and just really checking in with what's your mood like? What is an emotion that you're feeling? And even, you know, studies have shown that even just naming an emotion actually really helps with processing it. And so that's really, it's super basic, but it's something that tends to be, a lot of people ignore it and sort of even shame it, maybe feel like they're being selfish if they do that. And so I think that's an important one. Another one I would say.
And Andy, I feel like I'm really glad. I want to cut in because I'm really glad that you said naming that emotion helps, you know, with kind of understanding and moving forward. Because, you know, depending on your theology, I have heard from people who have said like emotions are not of God. Like we get our emotions will lead us down like a wrong path. And so then I think there is like a lot of walls put up. And so that doesn't prevent us from feeling those emotions, but then we then tie it to our faith and feel like, well, I can't feel that. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, just that idea of, you know, and I agree with you. I think I have seen a lot of people in the church stepping up and leaning into this conversation and having hard conversations. You know, Kay Warren does a great job talking about this, you know, and she has a huge platform. So I'm not saying that all Christians are doing this by any stretch, but there is kind of this idea. And I think probably it's rooted in what your view of God is, you know, and going down those deeper tracks of theology. Yeah. And so as somebody who has gone to seminary, I'd love to, just pick your brain.
Wow. Yeah. That's a huge one for me. Because you know, when I kind of told you guys about that trauma-informed perspective, and one of the big pieces of being trauma-informed is really, being able to regulate your emotions. And so this idea, what I mean by that is learning how to feel your feelings in a way where you are still the boss of the feelings. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
What's hard is that when people are taught so that they can't have feelings, one of two things typically happens. Either one, they repress their feelings. They're like, oh, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. Nothing's wrong. I'm fine. And then what happens is a lot of times people self-medicate. Because they've got all this stuff that they haven't dealt with. And it's like a gaping wound that they're walking around with. And they're like, what will make this wound feel better? But don't look at the wound, but just give me something to make it feel better, you know? And so, you know, I think a lot of addiction, a lot of things like, you know, alcoholism, pornography, sometimes even just our, you know, when people, their emotions suddenly get out of control, they're like, oh, I don't know what happened to me. Oftentimes that's because they actually haven't been in touch with what's going on with their feelings. And it's like they've dissociated from it. And so then when it comes up, it feels like opening Pandora's box. So like that's one, you know, that's one element of it. Sometimes it like they just become numb. But what happens then is that oftentimes they also numb the good feelings. You know, Brené Brown, she has a famous quote that says, we're not able to numb. We can't selectively numb emotions. So if you try to just pretend that you don't feel sad and you do that successfully, you might be successful, but you probably will also numb your joy. So we pay a really high cost to not feel our feelings. All that to say, this emotional regulation piece is really important because ultimately, what I'm not advocating for is that we're walking around at the mercy of our emotions. But if we never learn how to feel them, we will be. We will be. Because they will, you guys have probably heard of like Bessel van der Kolk's book, The Body Keeps the Score. Mm-hmm. It's a really, you know, it's a wonderful book on trauma. But really, there's so much wisdom even in that title because it's like, you don't have to have experience full on PTSD for your body to keep the score on what you're not feeling. You know, from a Christian perspective, man, I look at King David and I'm like, the man had some feelings, you know, like he was a feeler. Yes. And, you know, if God puts that in the Bible and models for us what it looks like to feel those feelings. So, you know, I think there are other instances in the Bible where there's lots of joy too, but here there are many, what we would call negative emotions. All over the Psalms, you know, one particular story that's really dear to me is when Jesus goes to Mary and Martha after Lazarus died, and Jesus knew that he was going to raise Lazarus, but before he said anything or did anything about that, he wept. He wept.
Mm-hmm. I love that part.
And that for me is like, oh man, like any time that I feel like, does God get it? Does mm-hmm. he get it? Does he get me? Mm-hmm. Does he get pain? Is he with my mm-hmm. clients? Is he with me? I'm like, no, but Jesus, before he fixed it, first he wept. And so mm-hmm. all that to say, I think there's tons of points of integration for Christians. And, you know, I think what people are afraid of is the power of our emotion. And to some extent, that's fair because emotion is powerful. But what we have to learn is that emotions aren't necessarily facts. They're just giving us information. That's it. They're just checkpoints. We can learn to have those feelings and give them the space they need. And then this is the cool part. We can learn to let them move through our body. Mm. And that ultimately is what emotional regulation is. And that is a really big foundation for what it means to be trauma informed. And so the more that we learn how to feel feelings, the more resilient we become. Because it's like when we stare down the face of something really hard, if we know how to grieve that, if we know how to move through that well, we will. We won't get stuck. And it doesn't mean it's not hard. I don't want to undermine that. Mm-hmm. But I think it is possible.
So Lindsay and Shannon, you've both shared that, you know, that this has been a part of your family. So when you hear that, what does that drudge up in you?
I was thinking the importance of that message for parents because I mean, one of the very first things that we learned when we became foster parents was the importance of teaching all of our kids to identify their emotions and to give them language and to be able to say, I'm mad, I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm angry, I feel loved right now. And to recognize in their bodies what that feels like for exactly what Andi is talking about so that they can let the feelings in. And then they will go, you know? And so I just think it's so key and so important, and not just for kids from hard places, but all of us. Like, mm-hmm. And that was the other thing I was thinking is how little I knew about controlling my own emotions, my own emotional regulation, until I was faced with someone else's really big emotions that they couldn't control. And that was the moment for me that I was kind of like, oh crap, I've got to get a handle on this. Like, I've got to be in control of myself for a number of reasons, but like one is just to be able to model for my kids, like, this is what it looks like to be angry, but not explode, or to be, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, how kind of ill prepared I felt for that. And thinking back on my childhood, and I don't remember ever talking about feelings or emotions or the fact that they give us information and they tell us what we think and they're okay and acceptable and we shouldn't mm-hmm. feel shame. Like, I don't ever remember having those kind of conversations. So I'm really glad that these are conversations that are being had in society and in the church, because I think we're going to raise a generation of kids who will be much better prepared to deal with the world and relate to one another, you know?
Yeah.
Andi, I'm curious, with your clientele, do you see a difference between people of faith, like, I guess, church-going Christians, ones who are really, you know, have really integrated faith into every area of their life, let's say. And maybe nominal Christians or unbelievers or whoever, kind of, do you see any difference between the kind of shame that a Christian holds on to if they're struggling with mental illness, or is it pretty much the same for both parties?
That's a great question. Well, so I also work a good amount with non-Christians, and so I think that's an interesting one to put in there too. And so what I would say is that, you know, shame is pretty pervasive in terms of mental health, but I think it tends to look different. I think, you know, for folks who aren't Christians, I think that that tends to look like just plain old striving, like keeping up with the Joneses. It has a little bit of a different flavor, but it's definitely still shame, you know. For Christians, I would say a lot of Christians who come in who haven't, what I would say haven't done a lot of work. What I see is a really big struggle to have any self-compassion. And I think I see that sometimes with non-Christians too, but because I don't think it's as stigmatized in non-Christian culture, I think sometimes it's easier for folks to understand this concept of having kindness for ourselves. But I think because there's a lot of mixed messages in the Christian world, that is a really key piece, in my opinion. I think the Christians who are more integrated tend to be able to essentially accept that they have permission to be kind to themselves, that Jesus is kind to them and they can be kind to themselves. You know, like there's a really, to be honest, there's a pretty big gap between the folks who can begin to internalize that and the folks who can't or don't. And sometimes that's honestly very much based on their story. Sometimes it's because we really need to go into their story and really do some work to look at what taught them. Where did you learn that you're supposed to be kind to everybody else but yourself? Where did you learn that you're supposed to take care of everyone else but not yourself? And so the folks who I've seen be able to grasp that a little bit more, I would say that oftentimes their ability to get well goes a little bit faster, because it is such a vital part of being able to have a corrective emotional experience. Part of that is being able to give yourself permission to have that. It's sort of like saying, it's like this part of yourself that is sort of the boss. It's like, do you have a kind boss or do you have a mean boss? You know, and if your boss is kind, then they're like, yeah, do give that to yourself. Yes, do implement these self-care pieces. Do get more rest. Do have good boundaries. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But those parts that mean, you know, these are not a very good description for it, but for lack of a better word, the shaming boss, or that this part of ourselves that's unwilling, is like, well, yeah, you could do that, but you're not really worth it, you know, or, yeah, you could do that, but it won't make a difference, you know, or, everybody else does deserve it, but you don't. And so it's really hard to begin to integrate those really important action steps if we can't be loving, and if we kind of can't say, you know, Lord, what do you think about me? How do you see me? And can I in turn then give that to myself? You know, can I accept that essentially?
Yeah, that's good.
So as we think about wanting to make people feel like they can have the space to do that, are there things that just any of us can do to support friends that are doing the hard work of kind of getting themselves healthy or taking care of their mental health? Like, what can we do as like the big C church, and then just individually, what can we do?
Yeah. So that's a great question. And yeah, I just love that you're thinking about it. You know, I think from the big C church, I think it's essential that we continue to have these conversations. It's essential that we honor the truth that, you know, science does have a lot to teach us, because all truth, if it's true, then by definition, it's true, right? And God is the author of truth. And so I think it takes a lot of humility to say, let me take this information and learn from it and see, like, Lord, what do you want us to learn from these things? And I think that's just going to continue to be essential for the Big C Church. Mm-hmm. We can't dig in our heels so much to be unwilling to just listen. You know, I think a lot of it's about posture. Are you willing to learn? Are you willing to be humble? I think for me as a clinician, I'm really passionate about, I want churches to learn these things. I want to educate folks, but it's hard to do that if there's a posture of you have nothing to teach us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that matters a lot. It matters a lot. And I think as we continue to really, you know, I think the other thing for Big C churches is that for pastors and for folks in ministry, I just would so encourage them to do their own work. Even when you think you don't have work to do, therapy is so important, because oftentimes we're so good at hiding things from ourselves, you know, and those patterns and those ways of being with people and those relational, all of it, they show up. And the more that we pretend and deny, the more it's going to come up. And so it's really important when we're working, well, really for anybody, but especially when you're working with people in fragile places, which I think a lot of times in ministry you are, to be doing your own work. And so, you know, and that doesn't always have to look like always being in therapy, but it's just a posture again of being willing and saying, okay, is this a time? Is this an issue? Who are the people in my life that are safe and that I can talk to about these hard things? So I think those are, you know, those are two pretty big areas, because really it creates an inside out change in the Big C Church. And that is what's going to be most sustainable. You know, you can implement programs all day, but if people don't experience and don't touch their own wounds, they're not going to have compassion for other people's wounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that so much.
Yeah. Jesus is the wounded healer, right? And I mean, my husband's a pastor, and I'm just nodding and nodding and nodding as you're talking, because that is something that has really, our lead pastor has kind of said, like, I want the leadership to be able to go in and have someone that they can talk to, a professional, and do that work, just like what you were saying. And exactly, like when people are in tender places and we're doing ministry, and Lindsay, maybe you can speak to that too with your kind of unique spot and the people that you are neighboring with and loving and coming alongside too. But exactly right. I think you're just exactly right. Like, we have to work on ourselves, because we all have mental health, right? Like, we're all, you know, multidimensional people that God created. And I love that you said that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in answer to your second question, what can you guys do? What can we each do? In a way, it's kind of similar. like, again, doing our own work continues to be important, because otherwise it creates an us versus them. Like, oh, you're sick. Right. I'm not. You know what I mean? Like, you have issues. I don't. Yeah. And sure, there's a spectrum there. And yes, there are different levels of intensity. But again, I think it's touching. And the woundedness in ourselves gives us more compassion for the woundedness in others. And, you know, on a more practical level, I think sometimes that looks like, I know for me, like in the stage of life I'm in with two kids, you know, I see a therapist. And sometimes it's one of the hardest parts is just the logistics. Who's going to watch the kids?
Yes.
Where are the kids going to be? When am I going to do it? You know, and so just being a person who's safe to land, like, you know, I think it's important not to push yourself past what you can truly do. But if you can do it, like, what margin do you have? Like, can you watch your friend's kids while they go? Can you be a place that they can process after counseling? Because oftentimes there's a lot more processing to be done.
Yeah.
Do they just need a big hug? You know what I mean? Like, that's some hard work. That's like running a little marathon. So, you know, I think a lot of it is about safety. Being a safe person, being a person who isn't so quick to jump in and fix the problem. You know, I often say in therapy to folks, I say, you know, if this were simple, you probably wouldn't be here. So I'm not going to like insult you with like oversimplifying what you're going through. Because I don't think that I don't think that's helpful. And so sometimes I think one of the things that matters a lot is not being so quick to being like, well, have you tried da 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 da? You know what I mean?
Yes.
And there are times and places to say, you know, hey, can I give you some feedback? And if they're interested, they'll say yes. And if they're not, like, be a person that it's okay to say no, you know, like let that be okay. I think that matters a lot. And so what that does is it creates a wider net rather than it just being about just the therapy, which sometimes is very important and helpful. But, you know, relationships just matter so much.
A couple episodes back, we talked to Jo Saxon, and she was talking about, she said, I'm a different person going into the gym than I am coming out. And as I think about our physical health, you know, I keep coming back to that aspect of mental health and the way that it's like, you know, such an oversimplification, but to visualize like going into the gym, whether that's going in to see a therapist or sitting down and really working on stuff or talking to a doctor, you know, whatever you're doing, but just you're a different person coming out of that. You're a healthier person. And I love those suggestions that you've given us and given the church. And I hope that we can keep inching toward being a healthier church body and being, you know, just good neighbors, you know, love our neighbors as ourselves. And that means that we have to love ourselves. Right?
Yeah. Well, and I just appreciate you guys sharing little bits of your story and 'cause this stuff it's super tender, you know, it's very tender, but it's brave. I think to be able to just say, hey, this is our experience and it's real. And so I just really love that, you know, I know, you know, with who you guys are speaking to be able to name that's part of your experience. I think that is such a big deal. And so I love that you're doing that.
Well, Andi, thank you so much. There's so much more to say, as always. But we are so grateful to have you, and you've given me a lot to think about, and I know you've given our listeners a lot to think about. Where can we find you online if we want to know more about you? You're a writer. Where can we find your work?
Yeah, so I blog at, it's called bravelyimperfect.com, and then I'm probably the most active on Instagram, and my handle is Andi Kolber. And recently been a little bit more active on Twitter. So that's also Andi Kolber. And then I'm on Facebook at Andi Kolber, writer and therapist.
Great. Awesome. Thank you so much. We are continuing to try to just have these conversations, right? It's just one little step in front of the other. And so I hope that you guys listening have got something to think about. And we hope that you have somebody that you can talk to about this and process and find those people that you can have a safe landing pad. So join us next time. We have a lot more things in store. You can find us at upsidedownpodcast.com. upsidedownpodcast.com. We're on Instagram, Upside Down Podcast. We also have a really great group of listeners that have kind of formed and really have kind of blown us as hosts away. And you can find that on Facebook. It's Upside Down Tribe. Just search for us. We'll let you in. There's a lot of great processing that happens post-episode or as things come up. And I've really been impressed with the way people have stewarded stories well. And, you know, the internet can be such a tough place, but I really have felt that this has been kind of a special spot to go if you're just looking for community in kind of the internet kind of way. So join us on there. We're just really glad to be able to talk about this stuff. If this episode did strike a chord to you, just know you're not alone, and we are grateful to have you as one of us in these conversations. So thanks for listening.